Welcome to But For Real, a variety show podcast co-hosted by two therapists who also happen to be loudmouth feminists. I'm Valerie, your resident elder millennial child-free cat lady.
And I'm Emerson, your resident chronically online Gen Z brat. And on the show, we'll serve up a new episode every other week that will take you on a wild ride through the cultural zeitgeist, mental health, and beyond.
You'll definitely laugh and TBH sometimes maybe cry a little because this is a silly and serious show.
Buckle up, my friends, and let's get into today's episode.
Today's episode is all about boundaries. Now, of course, we're therapists. We talk about boundaries in these episodes all the fucking time. But we haven't done like a boundaries deep dive. So I just want to know how your relationship to boundaries has changed across your life as someone that's, you know, old. And I'm just so sprightly and young.
Oh my God. You know, she's over there in session going, what is happening in there?
Sorry. So yeah, it's interesting for me to reflect on this because I like not to be a bitch.
We'll be a bitch.
But
you know, that's
what I feel like. I've always kind of been good at boundaries. Like,
I see that for you.
I'm just not here for bullshit, you know? And never have been. Well, now, sure. I think in the past I was maybe a little bit more willing to kind of contort myself. And, you know, certainly there would still be situations where that temptation would be there. But for the most part, I'm just like, listen, I'm going to be straight with you about what I can do and what I can't. So take it or leave it.
I respect that about you. I hope you know that.
Thanks. What about you?
I feel like my relationship to boundaries is certainly changing the older that I get. Maybe just from like a mere survival perspective where I'm like, oh,
it has to
change. Like you can't meet to meet. You can't just be doing what you're doing. And I think my relationship to that has always been very framed around like being a Brit, like a very overly polite people, like our culture kind of around like politeness and manners and just like our way of being, like very don't rock the boat, stiff upper lip, you know, stuff like that. So like that always really, I think, was the underbelly of what informed my ability to like appropriately take up space and to like make space. I think it's changing. Me and my family joke all the time that like we think we're becoming more rude the longer time that we spend.
Am I rude or am I just setting appropriate boundaries?
And like that's why I think this conversation is so important, especially amongst women, because I hear all the time language where someone's trying to set boundaries and we think that they're a bitch.
Right.
And I'm like, well, is this about being a bitch or is this just about having an appropriate boundary with someone? So I wouldn't say I've mastered this or that I'm really great at it or that I like can be as wise and sage
and
as
old.
Valerie and old. I just have to throw that in there. Just get a little crazy with it. But I think it's becoming more survivalist, more important. So I'm excited to see where it goes. I'm open to keep growing.
Okay.
I'm open to being a student of myself.
Excited for this era for you.
Thank you much.
Less self-sacrificial, perhaps.
Hey.
Now it's time for our first segment, Tea and Crumpets, where we tell you what we can't stop talking about this week.
My tea is I'm just a fucking girl. And if you're not cued into these two things, I don't know how girly that you are. Obviously, we're coming up on the end of the Olympics.
At the time of this filming.
At the time of this filming. Many a thought there, just in general. But Alyssa Liu, I mean.
Just my jaw on the floor.
On the floor. I can't stop watching her.
Yeah.
That gold dress performance and her exhibition performance to Stateside by Pink Panthers and Zara Larsson. You're fucking kidding me. I'm like, get the 20-year-olds at the Olympics. I want to see them. I want to see Gen Z, Ilia Malinin too. I'm like, get the young people at the Olympics. They're serving. And not only is it just like a total serve, I've never seen, like, I don't really give a fuck about the Olympics. I do, but I don't.
Right.
And the Winter Olympics, really the only thing I'm locked in for is figure skating. Get out of here. But, like, I just think of, like, some of the mere, like, the small amount of history I know about that sport and just, like, the Russia of it all and, like, young people and doping and all this crazy shit. But, like, to hear a young, like, woman that is an athlete talk about, like, yeah, I lost my spark for this sport and, like,
yeah,
you know, this wasn't like going to be my whole life. And like now I decided to come back and like at a healthier way, and no one's going to give me like encourage me to have an eating disorder. And I'm going to do this like healthy and proud and for fun. Like to even hear a young person say, I'm coming to the Olympics like for fun.
Yeah. Like her and Simone Biles showing how it's done, showing how to set a motherfucking boundary. It's
done. Mm-hmm. I mean, Simone Biles, I have so much respect for her. Yeah. Like, wow. Mm. But I just can't. Yeah. Just like seeing what that's like. I'm curious for you, like, not to be like, you know, Valerie, but like, I mean, women like at this like caliber, right? Like is so wild to think about. And I know you were posting on Instagram in your stories about her too. So yeah, just what's your truth on this diva?
Well, right. The juxtaposition between the Carrie Strug of it all, right? And these people saying, I am only going to continue to compete at this elite level if it can coexist with joy in my life. And I don't know Carrie Strug's truth. Like, maybe she like feels happy and proud that she pushed herself in that way. And, you know, previous generations of these elite athletes, and I mean, Michael Phelps, you know, how the pressure of that can just crush you. So seeing someone say, like, be able to, not only was that sort of reclamation of what the priorities were necessary for her to just be a healthy young adult, but also arguably it won her the fucking gold. And that's like, as someone who's so interested in high performance, I'm just like, take notes, right? Like, take notes on what joy can open up for you. And just I was late on watching her performance. I watched it while I was waiting for the airplane to take off the other day. And I'm sitting in my seat next to these strangers, like, crying as I'm watching it. Like,
me too.
Just, I mean. And
I was fascinated.
How powerful it is even to experience the second hand of that, to witness it.
Yes.
I feel so much joy.
Oh, my
God. And then on top of that, Punch.
Baby Punch the monkey.
Because we have the exact same tea and crumpets as we can't shut the fuck up about these two things.
I can't stop thinking about that little guy. He's in my brain. I'm just like looking, and I can't talk about him other than talking like this.
Because it breaks your little heart.
Baby.
Yeah, he is just a baby.
He's a baby, and he just wants a mommy and friends. And those little motherfucking monkeys those that were assholes dragging him, bitch, I stood up.
Yeah.
And then I was like, this is why I'm not a Jane Goodall of it all, babe. Because I would be like, And these monkies are like,
oh, fuck you up.
Oh, fuck you up, bitch. Yeah. And I'm like, no, you're right. Because monkeys scare me.
Yeah, well, they're fierce. Yeah.
Yes.
And I do wonder, like, because, you know, I saw all this Punch content, and then me being the PETA girly that I am, you know, I saw what they were posting, and it's like, hey, guys, like, maybe don't keep amplifying this content because he's living in this, like,
zoo
cement prison.
Yes.
Which is so sad. Yes. And so it's like, I'm simultaneously so happy we're having a Mudang sequel of seeing this, like, sweet baby that we all get to be collectively obsessed with and want to be protective of.
Yes.
And yet the reality of the unfortunate circumstance this being is in, and I just wish that we could, like, free him and put him in a real sanctuary. But then I wish that for all of the animals. And, you know, and I know you mentioned zoos later, and like, not all zoos are created equal.
No.
So let's acknowledge that. Mm-hmm. But being in a cement box, ain't it?
No, it's sad.
I love you, Punch.
I love you, Punch. And like, I want him to be so happy. And yes, a teaser to later, because I put for my dumpster fire Phoenix. I feel so strange about zoos. Like, I personally, with my adult money, don't support zoos. Yeah. Like, I don't go. Mm-hmm. Or aquariums. And people get really tell up about
weird
that.
About that, yeah.
But I'm like, whatever, it's my fucking dollar.
Yeah, yeah.
But yes, Whittle Punch.
Oh, love you.
Love you. And just, I love, the collective loves a baby animal.
Yes.
It brings us a little bit of light in, like, really awful times.
And am I correct that he has started to develop some relationships?
He has. Okay. One of them has kind of taken to him. Okay. And so I'm like, okay. So, like, we get to, like, in real time watch that, which is pretty cool.
And, like, we love an underdog story.
Oh, my God. We fucking love an underdog. We are the underdogs.
The under monkeys.
The under monkeys. The under baboons.
Now it's time for Step Into My Office, where you get advice from your favorite professionally qualified, personally peculiar therapists.
Dear Val and M, I've always been the easy one in my family. I'm the one who smooths things over, always shows up despite my personal life, and I'm the one who doesn't make a big deal ever. Recently, I told my mom that I can't be her emotional sounding board about my dad anymore. I tried to say it gently and honestly, but she cried and said I was being cold and uncaring. Now my sister says I'm being dramatic and using therapy speak, and it's not a big deal. It's just how our family is. I feel awful. Mm. Part of me knows I can't keep absorbing everyone else's stuff because it's literally draining, but another part of me feels selfish that I'm not being a good daughter. My family has gone through a lot, and I want to be there for them, but I just don't think I can in the ways that they're used to anymore. How do I set a boundary without feeling like I just set the house on fire? Sincerely, recovering family glue stick.
Oh, family glue stick.
Bitch, are you me? I'm like, what?
I'm sorry. Wow. Emerson, I didn't know you wrote in a submission.
Whoopsie. I mean, so many thoughts.
Right. I guess to start, like, I understand the whole pushback of like, oh, this is just therapy speak, because there are circumstances where people are weaponizing therapy language and not doing it in appropriate ways. And so, like, let's just, you know, say, yes, that is a thing that can happen. But listener, it does not sound like that's what's happening here. And I absolutely have heard of clients who, like, say with, you know, young adult client, parent, where they have, you know, tried to set boundaries and maybe use that word and had the parent just be like, that just sounds like therapy bullshit. Mm-hmm. And it's like, actually, it turns out that it's kind of like a healthy thing to do. So,
well, and that response just always tickles me so bad, because I just had a recent conversation with a friend about this with her mom. And, you know, some of the same, like, oh, you know, this is just like therapy bullshit. Why is that? Like, if that's the response from someone, like, girl, like, look inward.
Deflecting much?
I mean, come on. Like, that's just therapy bullshit. Like, I mean.
Yeah.
So have you ever gone to therapy? First off. So, like, that's the bitchy part of me. Mm-hmm. The bitchy part of me also really is, like, your sister. I want to be like, bitch, shut up. Like. But I'm not mad at sister, because I can...
Sister's in the system, too.
She's in the system, too. We're all enmeshed here. And, like, I really hear, like, it's just how our family is. Yeah. Like, I really hear the struggle with people pleasers and folks, you know, that struggle with that boundary setting, because it is hard to break off and, like, blaze that trail. Like, it is really scary. Mm-hmm. And for some people in their family systems, unfortunately, it can't happen.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I'm hearing, like, part of me thinks this, part of me thinks that. You know what you need to do, listener. Like, you know that what you did, although uncomfortable, was necessary. And the thing that I think people get really tore up with boundaries is that setting them doesn't always feel good.
Right.
But they are necessary, and we have to work with a little bit of that discomfort there of, even though this is necessary, it kind of sucks to do it, and it's difficult to uphold it. But that in the long run, boundaries are very like thinking of your future self in my head. Like, yes, it's the present self, but it is thinking of the future you that gave this relationship the credence that you think it deserves to set that boundary with someone. So, you know, I know it feels bad, dude, but it sounds like you're doing what you need to be doing.
Yeah, and that there's intentionality around how you're bringing it. Like, you know, said, I tried to say it gently and honestly, that, you know, setting boundaries is not license to be a bitch, right? No. To like, be harsh. I love the quote from Terry Real that said, there's nothing harshness does that firm compassion can't do better, right? So it's like, it is possible to be firm and direct and still kind, but it may not be received that way. You may be told that you're being cold, and that's not necessarily true.
No.
Yeah.
No, we're kind of dealing with multiple truths and multiple realities here, which I think is always really challenging, especially in the family realm. So keep listening, dear listener. And I think you're on the right track, buddy.
Yep.
It's just an uncomfortable one.
And now it's time for the DSM. In our DSM, all varieties of dysfunction, spiraling, and meltdowns are welcome. In this segment, we break down complicated concepts and common misconceptions about mental health, well-being, and tell you what we really think.
Of course, today we were talking about ye old boundaries. And this sort of idea, this concept really came to popular discourse in the 80s, 90s, the yes. family systems therapy, Bowen, codependency, Melody Beatty, all of that world, you know, adult children of alcoholics, like we talked about before, and Codependency Anonymous, like all of that kind of coming up big in the 80s and 90s. And then in 92, the book Boundaries by Cloud and Townsend brought it into mainstream Christian counseling spaces, but also, you know, just more general kind of popular lexicon. And really, when, you know, it first kind of came to be, it was about differentiation, which yes. I love. How do I find myself as my own sort of sovereign being who's in relationship with other, you know, people and organizations and whatever, and negotiate what that looks like in a way that feels intentional and, you know, honoring, maintaining a sense of self in that relationship. Mm-hmm. And of course, over time, the internet doing what it does, pop psychology doing what it does. And now we are in the cut people off culture, which, you know, we've talked about before, like in our rupture repair episode. Sure, sometimes that sort of more rigid, definitive thing is necessary. Mm-hmm. But as usual, there's a lot of nuance that is helpful to step into with boundaries. So ultimately, boundaries are a statement of what you will and won't participate in, yes. what you will and won't engage with. It's setting limits around your time, your energy, your body, your values, your emotional capacity, mm-hmm. maybe your money. And it's something that you enforce through your own behavior, right? So this is such a thing that we'll keep drilling in this episode is like, a boundary is I can't tell you what you should do, right? Mm-hmm. I am enforcing my boundary through my behavior. So it's not controlling someone else. It's not an ultimatum that is disguised as I'm being empowered. It's not a demand and it's not a punishment.
I feel like this is an important distinction that a lot of people who have the tendency to talk about boundaries like they know it. Again, in that, just like Valerie was saying, where it's like, oh, well, you can't do this, and that's my boundary. Mm. Hey, that's not a boundary. You're telling someone what the fuck to do. So it's important to flesh out internal versus external boundaries. Mm. So internal boundaries are how you manage yourself. So, you know, an example, if I will leave if we're raising voices. Mm. That's fine. Mm-hmm. That is a totally okay boundary to have. I'm not responding to texts after 9 p.m. Mm-hmm. Sure, you got to get to bed. I should probably put that one in place. Maybe make a 10. And I won't over-explain my no. So again, those internal boundaries, if you look at them from a lens of self-regulation and your self-management, that's what we have to think of. In tandem with external boundaries, they are the what that you communicate. So an example, I'm not available to talk about that. Please don't comment on my body. Mm. If that continues, I'm going to step away. So mm-hmm. the external is the communication. The internal is the follow through. And we need both.
Ooh, I know it's kind of obvious for us, but it's the distinction around like, yeah, I can make a request.
Yes.
And I can tell you what I plan to do if you don't honor my request.
Yes.
Right? I still can't make you do a thing, but I can tell you what I plan to do if, you know, you're not willing and able to align with that, right? Like sure. the whole commenting on my body, like you could say, well, that's telling someone what to do. Well, I can't say, don't, I mean, I can, but it's not really going to do anything. No. Don't.
If you're adamant about talking about my weight,
don't comment on my body.
Right.
If you do continue to, here's what then I'm going to do. Right.
Yes.
Yeah. So why is it so damn hard to set the boundaries? You know, our nervous system gets nervy. We get scared that, you know, oh my God, but what if this person, you know, leaves or they're upset with me and then I feel like a bad person. So all the attachment shit comes up. Conditioning, especially for women AFAB people, good girls are agreeable, right? And we see the Katherine Heigls and Anne Hathaways of the world get labeled difficult. Trauma, of course, can affect this. Like if boundaries were pushed, it can feel hard to set them. Identity, if you've been rewarded for over-functioning.
Yes.
This is, yeah, a big one. And power dynamics. Then if depending on the relationship, like let's say there's a, you know, thing with a boss or supervisor or something, mm-hmm. or even, you know, a parent who maybe is still paying for some of your stuff, that there can be financial, cultural safety sort of things at stake. And over time, it does get easier with practice, right? It, like you were saying earlier, it may not always go well. No. And even still, 5, 10, 20 years into setting boundaries, it's not always going to go smoothly or be easy. But the more practice you get, your nervous system learns that, wow, even though this was uncomfortable, this person is upset with me right now, mm-hmm. I survived. Your resentment decreases, which is huge. Carrying that around does not feel good. Your self-trust increases because you're honoring your own needs. Your relationships become more honest and real. Mm-hmm. That's invaluable. And the people who do stick around and are willing to kind of work with you in that process actually know the real you and honor the real you.
I think that's so important and something, you know, when I start like really talking in sessions with clients about with boundaries is some of that. Do I feel like the people in my life know me? Mm. Do I feel like they, I run groups. And so the main thing in those consult calls, everyone talks about depth, right? Like feeling like my relationships don't have depth and I'm seeking this depth and this connection. And that's great because I'm trying to run groups and fill groups and be in a group space to, you know, aid therapeutic change. And it's always so interesting to me just how open so many people talk about the fact that they're in relationship with people that they feel like the relationships aren't growing together or progressing, that they're very stagnant. And again, that's really distressing for some people and doesn't really matter for others. But I think the boundaries piece certainly goes into that because to me, you hear the resentment in that sometimes.
Oh, yeah.
Where, you know, in that situation in particular, or if it's a situation that's ongoing or something with my parents or something with a friend or a boyfriend or whatever, and we're not addressing stuff in real time, well, then you're going to fucking hate that person or hate the relationship.
Right.
And then, like, that kind of sucks because we're not really giving it a chance.
Yeah, giving them a chance to show up differently.
So it's important. Okay. So how do we actually fucking go about doing this, right? Because, again, I feel like we hang out on the internet with, like, this boundaries, and it's not, like, really what it is, and it drives me nuts.
Yeah.
So we need to start small. And you're like, bitch, no, duh. But I'm serious. Mm-hmm. You have to practice in low-stakes scenarios. If I have people that are very chronically trying to, like, heal people-pleasing or really, like, struggle with that differentiation or self-trust, please start small. And we'll even expose your hierarchy menu of what small means, babe, if we need to. So, no thanks. That doesn't work for me. It doesn't have to be anything crazy. Go do it with a stranger. One of the first things I ever tell people is that coffee shop that you pass all the time or that park or what or that store or whatever, just go into it and interact with someone in any capacity. Don't monologue before, you know, get too tort. I'm like, just go and get a flat white and just leave.
It's interesting too, like the obviously there's a strong overlap between boundaries and just general assertive communication.
Yes.
Right? Because usually if we're asserting ourselves in a moment, I don't know, it's not always a boundary, but it's like every time we set a boundary, we're being assertive.
Yes.
Right? So like practicing assertive communication in general in these low stakes scenarios, like, you know, if you ordered something at the restaurant and they brought it with the topping and that you asked for them to take off, right? Like practice, that's a moment, babe. That's a moment to practice.
I can't tell you how many memories I just had in my mind of like going through a drive-through window and being like, this coffee's wrong. I just kept driving. So those low stakes scenarios, please delay your yes. This is a really big one for me. One that I'm really, really trying to work on. You know, I'll get back to you. What's one I've been using a lot? That's earnest. I need to check my calendar before I commit to this.
Yep.
And I genuinely mean that. And I'm always like, do they think I'm a bitch because I didn't immediately say yes? If they do, then that's their truth, right? So please delay your yes. Use 24-hour rule, whatever. Mm-hmm. If you have someone that's always like, can you do this? And you're always saying yes, and then you're getting resentful and pissed off, that's time to take a little bit of a temperature check right there. Another big one for me, using fewer words. So the over-explaining of things just oftentimes is confusing to yourself and to somebody else. I have quite the tendency to be like, and this is what the, and I'm like, just stop. Like, just say what it is. Because I think that there is, we were talking about this in my neurodivergent group the other night, the tendency to be hyperverbal or overexplain because you're so worried that someone isn't understanding your intent. So, you know, but that overexplaining can kind of invite negotiation, or if you have someone that really struggles with boundaries and likes to give you a bit of pushback, then you're getting fucking steamrolled. Mm-hmm. So, yes. And then expecting discomfort, kind of what we were already talking about with our step into my office submission. But the discomfort does not equal danger. Being able to check in with yourself and say, okay, I'm really uncomfortable right now, but I'm not unsafe, is a huge mm-hmm. one that I love to teach anxious people about, because I'm anxious people. So being able to recognize that it, again, it may not feel great when you set the boundary or you use assertive communication or you stand up for yourself, whatever it is, it may not feel great in that moment, but it is great that you did that. So learning that you don't always, it's not always like this big fat dopamine hit that we think stuff is. And then kind of anchoring into values and looking at some repair. So, you know, I think a lot of times with boundaries, why does this thing matter? If I have a coworker that is always asking me for rides to work, and now I'm getting pissed, now I'm getting irritated because it's really far away and I have to go out of my way to go get them, and I'm making all these justifications. You know, like, what's the value? If it's I value rest and I'm going 45 minutes out of my way to pick coworker up twice a day, yeah, you're probably not resting. Right. That's in, you know, that's interrupting
cutting into your sleep time.
It's cutting into your sleep. It's cutting into your personal time. Is it affecting your finances? Whatever, right? So really find an anchor point to your values and start small. Mm-hmm. You know, if you want to kind of start isolating one relationship or one thing, think of the value behind that that you're feeling far away from or that you want to move closer to by setting those mm-hmm. boundaries. And then lastly, just repair if needed. You know, you can soften tone without erasing a boundary. Even if it kind of comes out a little bit clunky, that's okay. You know, check out our repair episode. I feel like that was a really great mm-hmm. one to talk about just repair in general. But I think a lot of times people approach, you know, you set a boundary down, someone reacts poorly, and then your inclination as a first time or new boundary setter is to say, okay, well, forget about it because I upset mm-hmm. you and it's not going to happen. You know, that's then not honoring yourself, right? And it's not honoring the person and the thing that you set out to do. So you can repair without completely snatching that boundary back and being like, just kidding, you know?
And on the flip side of that, like, it is okay to be mindful of your tone. Yes. And, you know, look at, like, what's going to be most effective here. Mm-hmm. Like, it might be that my direct thought is would come out kind of harshly, like, sure. Harsh startup, right? Where how can I soften that a little to where it's more effective and might actually get me more of what I want? Maybe, yes. Maybe not. But, and it's, you know, it's kind.
Yeah.
Even if it's firm. So we wanted to also make a little note to listeners who've maybe had boundaries set with you,
yes.
by someone. Because guess what? It's a two-way street, and this will happen at many points in your life. Somebody will set a boundary with you. It does not mean rejection, right?
Or that they hate you.
Right. Exactly. I mean, of course, cutoff culture, maybe there are times that they're like, hey, fuck off.
Right.
Which doesn't necessarily mean it's about you. But yeah, it might feel like loss, and your hurt is valid, right? Mm-hmm. But their limit may also be valid. And you may have two different perceptions of whatever is going on, and neither one of you are necessarily wrong. But really just getting curious about, like, what is coming up for me? Like, what can I take from this? Like, is there anything at this that I need to examine based on what was communicated to me? And what of that, like, actually fits and I might want to kind of do some work around, and what doesn't fit, what's maybe kind of like tells me more about them than it does about me, because that will happen too. Boundaries are ultimately, you know, a bid for a relationship that's sustainable and real, and if someone didn't care about you at all, they wouldn't even bother setting the boundary. They would just ghost you.
No. Boom. Mm-hmm. So, but for real, boundaries are not about becoming harder or being a bitch. They're about becoming more honest. And so if your relationships require you to completely self-abandon your truths, your values, in order to maintain these relationships, then I fear they are not sustainable. Boundaries do not end healthy relationships. They refine them. That's the biggest myth buster, I think, literally of all time. And people have boundaries not because they're ruthless, but because they refuse to just disappear.
And I love that. Right? Thank you for trying.
Thank you for trying.
And now, our musical segment, Now that's what I call
Okay.
Where Emerson and I each share a song with each other each week as representatives of our respective generations. We tell you a little bit about the song or artist, and then we press pause, we share the song with each other, and then we come back for our live reactions. And we're capturing it all on a Spotify playlist linked in the show notes for you.
So I wanted to go with theme. I've been dying to talk about Katie Turner. I had a song. It was Maddie Zom, and she co-wrote that with Katie Turner.
Okay.
So this is her. The song is called Therapy. So I just thought it was a perfect boundary song. So I first learned about Katie Turner, if you were unfamiliar. She competed on season 16 of American Idol, which was around 2019. She placed in the top 7 and was totally a crowd favorite. Like, cool. She was really great. Everyone loved her. She was so, like, she was, like, the kitschy, quirky one of the season. But this song, Therapy, is from her second album, Heartbroken and Milking It.
What a great title.
So good. She released it in 2021. And really, the album is small, but I, like, went back through my Spotify and I had every song liked on it. So yeah. I was like, oh, so I was into this album at that time. Mm-hmm. But yeah, just listen to the song. I feel like it really spells out boundaries and everything so well.
Amazing.
So I'm excited.
I liked it.
It's cute, right?
Yeah, just it is really cute. And she's got a fabulous voice.
Oh my God.
And this is going to sound like a backhanded compliment, but I mean it genuinely. I do, like, I'm not by any means calling her ugly, but I do love to see when people get in the spotlight in entertainment and they're not, like, the stereotypical definition of, like, what our society considers beautiful.
Yes,
right?
I agree with
that. Like, can you just be like an average looking person and have an amazing voice and have a successful singing career? I fucking hope so.
No, I'm actually so glad you said that, because I feel like a lot of the time, you know, I'm a pop princess, so I'm like with the girls or whatever, but there's a lot of times where most music that I feel at the soul level that I connect with isn't someone that, you know, I mean, some of
it is the Ariana Grande. Or,
sure. Yeah. You know, some of it is like her stuff and Taylor Swift that has been like monumental to me. Mm. But I think of, why am I blanking? Luke Combs. He's like a country singer, but like a guy that like nobody.
Louis Capaldi.
Oh my God. You know, like especially like guys, but like girl, like like femmes too, where I'm like, yeah, you don't have to. Not everyone's like a Tate McRae type pop girl. Like she's talented.
It's normalized.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay. What is your song for this week?
Okay. My tune is Hands Clean by Alanis.
Ooh.
You might know this one.
Okay.
It did get... I'm laughing because I'm like, it did get a lot of radio play when you were 3.
Which I was like, I'm watching Teletubbies.
But anyway, yeah, it is one of her more popular songs from her 5th album, 2002, called Under Rug Swept. Ooh. And one thing I learned when I was looking up about the song was that this song at the time caused controversy because it was reportedly her recollection of a taboo sexual relationship she shared with a much older man when she was about 14, which I thought, get it, girl, like talking about this in 2002, now that's like everyone talks about it and writes about it. But back then, no.
No, taboo.
So Alanis is just a queen.
Well, yes. She's so tea.
She really is.
I was telling Valerie, I was like, her, like, long hair, like, if I, like, just being a little girl, like, I loved shit like that, where I was like, you just, like, would pretend to be her because she was so cool.
Yes.
Like, also, yes, we were saying that, like, kind of not really that tea to talk about it now, like, these kinds of, like, large age gap relationships and abusive relationships, stuff like that. But, like, for the time, gag.
Right.
That's big gag.
And I was even thinking about, like, the idea of boundaries and, like, I've honored your request for silence.
Like, oh my God.
You know, babe, just because someone tries to set a boundary or make a request doesn't mean you have to honor it.
No.
Right?
This is true.
And now, for our last segment of the show, welcome to Fire Dumpster Phoenix. It is rough out there, y'all, and we need all the hope we can get. It's time to go dumpster diving for some positive news and rise from the leftover Happy Meal ashes together.
So, as kind of teased with talking about Little Baby Punch, this little guy is so fucking cute, and I could not share. I'll have to pull up a picture for you, but a 4-week-old baby giraffe born at the Toledo Zoo and Aquarium in Ohio is going viral due to his insane cuteness and his funny tuft of hair that everyone is so obsessed with. everyone feels like he looks a little goofy and nerdy, and so they've named him Eugene. He's 130 pounds of total cuteness, and the other giraffes and fans around the world are just so obsessed with him. And I put, we as a society love a baby animal story. Truly. I mean, it just brings people together, hon. Democrats and Republicans, we don't need policy work. We just need Mudang Punch and Eugene, you know, in safety. And yeah, we're all like, yes.
Can we somehow use these like, shared love of these animals to bring us together? Because that'd be great. That would be great.
Yes.
Oh, my God. Okay, so mine is that there is this woman, Megan McKivney, who decided that she was tired of all the news being so dark, so she decided to go out onto the streets of New York City and with her little sign being like, tell me your good news.
Aww.
And of course, you know, we can get cynical about, like, she's a social media consultant, she's building a following, whatever. But do you? So she's posting the videos of people sharing their good news, whether it's at the subway stops or just on the street. She's meeting people who are, like, celebrating music deals, friendship anniversaries, milestone birthdays, getting into their dream college. Like, just cool stuff. So I love that. Just another little person trying to spread the sunshine.
I love shit like that anyways. Like, videos where someone's like, can you hold this bouquet of flowers? And then he runs away. And then the little note is like, you're so worthy. Aww. Or, like, whatever. And these people are, like, having this huge bouquet. And they're like, what? Yeah. Like, it's so cute, and I don't care if it's fake. I mean, I do care
Random
if it's fake.
Random acts of kindness.
But, like, I love stuff like that. So shout out Megan. That's so sweet.
Yeah. All right, listeners, that's all we got.
Go watch videos of Baby Punch. I know we
do
will.
Do it.
Bye. Bye.
This has been another episode of But For Real, hosted by Valerie Martin and Emerson Ryder, and edited by Volt Productions.
But For Real is produced by the Gaia Center for Embodied Healing. The Gaia Center offers individual, couples, and group therapy for clients across Tennessee and in person in our Nashville office, as well as coaching and other programs for clients worldwide. For show notes or to learn more about our work, visit GaiaCenter.co or find us on Instagram at The Gaia Center and at ButForRealPod.
But For Real is intended for education and entertainment and is not a substitute for mental health treatment.
Also, since we host this podcast primarily as humans rather than clinicians, we are not shy about sharing our opinions here on everything from snacks and movies to politicians and social issues.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode.
See you next time, bestie.